Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls, on Instagram, at Locked On Bulls, on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, Himalaya app, along with Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you get podcasts. Make sure you subscribe to Locked On Bulls so you're getting our episodes as soon as they drop. Matt, how you doing? What's going on? I hope you didn't invest too much time into that Knicks-Bulls game last night because, man, I will say this. On top of it, in the fact that the Bulls were down almost 30 last night to the worst team in the NBA. But then everybody on the Bulls was playing for themselves, and it was probably one of the toughest watches of the entire year. But nonetheless, how you doing? What's going on? We got another tank out.
Yeah, honestly, I was sweating a little bit towards the end of that one. As soon as the Bulls were down big, I think that at one point they were close to being down 30 between the first and second quarter, and then they just kind of started to chip away at the lead little by little. And at one point, like middle of the fourth quarter, they got it all the way down to like 5. And I was like, I swear to God, if the Bulls come back and win this game, I'm going to be furious. It was tough to watch. Honestly, if you talk about the collective starting 10 players in that game last night, maybe one of the ugliest starting 10 in the NBA this season. Maybe one of the ugliest starting 10 in the NBA in like the last several years. I mean, it's hard to watch at this point. Thankfully, we're very near the end. We got 4 games left after that one last night. And after making me sweat a little bit, the Bulls did, you know, thank God, managed to lose that one. Unfortunately, we didn't get help from the Cleveland Cavaliers, who couldn't beat the Phoenix Suns. The Cavs sat Kevin Love. Everybody's sitting everybody at this point. So, I mean, I think at this point now it's going to be really hard for the Bulls to even work themselves into a tie with the Cavs, who have 2 fewer wins than we do. I think right now we've kind of finally cemented ourselves as stuck in that 4 spot in the draft lottery, which is a darn shame. And it was, you know, on a night when we had to watch some really, truly ugly basketball. You know, good for Robin Lopez, had a hell of a game on his birthday. 1 point shy of matching his career high. Jakar Sampson actually looked pretty decent coming off the bench. He had 22 for the Bulls. Luke Kornet was raining threes for the Knicks. And like when Luke Kornet looks like the best player on the floor, that's when you know, oh, these are 2 tanking teams in early April. My goodness.
That was my first thing is like, Luke Kornet has 24 points in this game. He's 8 for 11 and 5 for 7 from 3. You know, it's one thing if Kevin Knox is going off and having a good game, then I can deal with that. Like, we know what he was. Or if Mitchell Robinson is dominating in the post and you know, he's tearing apart Cristiano Felicio and Jakar Sampson and some of these other guys in the second unit. But Luke Kornet, 24 points, a team high for the Knicks. And you got other guys like Damian Dotson, who dropped 18, and Emmanuel Mudiay, who I'm pretty sure started the game like 2 for 12, and then ended up finishing 7 for 21. He had 17 points. It was just a collection of garbage, honestly. You had mentioned Robin Lopez. He did have a nice night, 12 for 18, and again on his birthday. But outside of that, you know, Jakar Sampson off the bench, 8 for 10, 22 points. That's fine. But, dude, I get it. He's playing for a contract. But, man, he didn't pass, I don't think, once. At the end of that game, I know they weren't – I'm not advocating for any wins, but seriously, if you're going to make an NBA roster and actually try to play a full season with a team – that dude had two or three fast breaks in the fourth quarter, and he didn't make one single pass. He took the ball, and I think Brandon Sampson was wide open for an easy bucket and was trailing him the entire time. And Jakar Sampson had two dudes ready faced up against the basket, and he wasn't making the pass. But, I mean, I guess that's what happens when you come up from the G League and you're trying to make a contract for next season.
I mean, even like at the end, you saw Raleigh Alkins chuck up a three as time was expiring and the game was over, which is kind of like a no-no. You know, it's an unwritten rule, much like Jim Boylan has been breaking some unwritten rules this season with his late-game timeouts and games that are blown out and way out of hand. But it's... as you said, everybody just kind of playing for themselves and trying to make an impression somewhere, somehow, desperate to find themselves a job for next season. And I think most of those guys in a Bulls uniform, especially those coming off the bench last night, know that, you know, also I guess outside of Blakeney, who did come off the bench last night and has a guaranteed contract with the Bulls, I mean, most everybody was just fighting for a job somewhere else. It was ugly. It was really ugly. One of the other players on the court who was semi-watchable last night, though, was Mitchell Robinson, the young, brand-new rookie center for the Knicks, who, if Bulls fans don't recall, is actually the result of a Bulls second-round pick that was initially sent to OKC in that campaign trade, which got Bulls fans all up in arms because how did we give them a pick in that deal? That was our Bulls fans' rallying cry for a long time. Some of us, it still is. And then that Chicago second-round pick in the Payne trade was then forwarded on from OKC to the Knicks in the deal that brought Carmelo to the Thunder. And that second-round pick was used by the Knicks to take none other than Mitchell Robinson, who had a double-double last night, 14 and 10, also adding four assists and three blocks. He's an exciting young player, and I think he's going to have a pretty solid NBA career. He's a little rough around the edges. He's got some elements of his game that he needs to develop, but that kid can play. And he's the latest example of how infuriating it is to see the Bulls not value second-round picks to see what they can potentially turn into.
Yeah, I remember talking about Mitchell Robinson, Matt, last summer, you know, when we were talking about whether or not the Bulls were going to maybe take Mikal Bridges with the seventh pick if they ended up there, or taking another wing, you know, with that 22nd pick, we were like, well, the Bulls are still going to be in need of a center. Mitchell Robinson, we're not really sure where he's going to go. Maybe back end of the first round. He ended up sliding all the way to the second round, and that was all because he didn't play college basketball for a year. All because of recruiting violations.
Right.
That's all. Otherwise, honestly, he plays a full year in college. He's probably a lottery pick last year, right? You redo the entire NBA draft. If he's not a lottery pick, then he goes in the top 20.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's been that impressive.
I was kind of surprised that he fell as far as he did, because just based on his, you know, his measurables, what we knew about his, you know, his length, his height, his, you know, his two-way potential as a front court guy who can score a little bit and also certainly poses a threat protecting the rim and blocking shots. As I said, he had three blocks last night. He was maybe one of the highest upside bigs in that draft class. And as you said, just because of the fact that he did not do a one-and-done year and essentially just stayed out of basketball for, just waiting around for the NBA draft, his stock fell a little bit. But absolutely, if you go back and redo that draft, he goes higher than the second round. He is a first-round pick, and as you said, maybe likely even lottery.
Yeah, I think his exit early from Western Kentucky before he even played a game, I think, had part and reason because of
some weird recruiting things going on there, because, again, why the hell would you pick Western Kentucky out of all places to go play school when you're a top 10 recruit in the entire country, especially in a recruiting class like 2017's recruiting class was? He was the 8th overall ranked recruit in 2017. But nonetheless, we've seen recruits do this. Like, I remember Terrence Ferguson two or three years ago, he was the 5th ranked prospect, and then he went over and played in Australia, and then he dropped all the way from being a potential lottery pick to the back end of the 20s. So.
Well, and I think, but some of that was that people watched him play in Australia and were suddenly less impressed than what he was as a prospect coming out of high school.
True. That's true.
And whereas Mitchell Robinson, his stock fell just because there wasn't really any tape of him to watch from his lone year where he had to wait out being eligible for the draft, and instead of having played somewhere, whether he had gone overseas or left Western Kentucky and gone somewhere else in the States to play, and stock fell because he didn't look as good playing against competition of that level, it was just like his stock fell because people kind of forgot about him. But like Terrence Ferguson went over and played in Australia and looked bad, and that's why his stock fell.
Yeah, I think people were more gambling on the fact that he could be a project more than anything else. And that's what's weird about some of these prospects too, is like, I think that does factor into it, is tournament bias definitely plays a factor into some of these decisions coming into the draft. And also people forget how good players are if they don't play for a couple of months, you know, whether it is injuries or whether they have some troubles with recruiting or they're having violation problems or whatever the case may be, and they're not on the floor for a few months. The scouts tend to forget you, or players, people or fans tend to forget you, and then all of a sudden you slide and teams end up pulling a diamond in the rough. And that's kind of what the Knicks did, I think, here. So, yeah, they did good. I mean, they got Kevin Knox and Mitchell Robinson in that draft last year. So they shouldn't be complaining at all. I'm a fan of him, too. So this should just only continue to remind Bulls fans that with that Memphis second-round pick this year, it's good to have that. I wish we would have had it in two stronger drafts in 2017, 2018, but I digress.
Yeah, it's going to be harder to find a second round gem this year with this class being as weak as it is.
I still like some guys, though. I mean, Naz Reid, Carson Edwards, Admiral Schofield, Shamori Ponds. I mean, there's still some guys, so I wouldn't mind taking one of those dudes if they're still hanging around at 36, 37, depending on where that Memphis pick is. So
I'm definitely on board with Admiral Schofield being a Bull just solely because of how awesome the name is.
He's an Illinois guy, too, from Zion, Illinois. So
I know. And also, I think he should just flop it. And, you know, like some international soccer players have their first name on the back of their jersey instead of their last name. He should just have we need a Bulls jersey that just has the name Admiral on the back.
He's a good player too, you know. I wonder if his skills can translate to the next level, you know. If he can continue to shoot the three well and he can continue to defend the perimeter, the dude's built like a tank. So
yeah.
He'd be fun. I mean, he can switch between the two and the three. He'd be a fun dude to take a flyer on in the second round. We'll have to see what the Bulls take.
And
first round pick.
Definitely, I think, helped his draft stock with Tennessee's performance in the tourney.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
I think it's a disappointment to them and a lot of people like myself who had Tennessee going all the way to the Final Four. But even still, in the games that they did play in the tourney, I definitely think he bumped his stock a little
bit. Just looking back at the rest of this Knicks game, just to kind of wrap it up real fast, anything else that you can grab from this? Ryan Arcidiacono had another decent game. I mean, 14 points off the bench. He was 5 for 8. He had 2 assists, 1 rebound. That was about it. He was a minus 10 in the plus minus. I didn't think he did anything great. He only played in 17 minutes in this one, but he did drop 14 points. So that was okay to see too. Shaq Harrison did have a great night after coming off a pretty solid last 2 or 3 weeks. And by great night, he just had an off night shooting. He still had 10 rebounds, 5 assists, and 1 steal, and only 1 turnover. He was 3 for 11 from the field with 6 points. But like again, I said, most of the guys that were out on the floor for like 75 to 80% of the time, anytime they had the ball in their hands, nobody was passing. Everybody was kind of playing for themselves for the majority of this game. So it was kind of hard to see anybody have a real opportunity to showcase everything that they can do on the floor outside of Robin Lopez, who can pretty much do it all by himself underneath the glass.
Yeah, and I mean, like, so much of what we saw last night as to, like, how the Bulls are losing down the stretch here is just a gross lack of three-point shooting. With Otto on the shelf and now LaVine and Lowry, like, they just are really missing a threat behind the three-point line because, I mean, we talked a little bit about it on Outsiders last night. The Bulls shot 20 more shots than the Knicks. 20 more attempts, 94 shots for the Bulls, 74 shots for the Knicks. But guess what? The Bulls made 4 three-pointers and the Knicks made 18. The Knicks turned the ball over 16 times, and shockingly, the Bulls only turned the ball over 6 times. So the Bulls took 20 more shots and had 10 fewer turnovers and lost essentially a blowout. That is how valuable three-point shooting is in today's NBA, and it's why the Bulls right now are as bad as they are.
You know, and it goes back to, too, I mean, this goes back to coaching. I'll say it, like, yeah, you don't have the players out on the floor, too, but, I mean, Fred didn't have the players last year, and he was still running the system where guys were still chucking up 33 to 35 three-point attempts a game because that's what he wanted them to do, and he realized that that's the way the NBA is going. And Boylan's doing the exact opposite. I don't know. Like, sure, it was working a little bit in December and then a little bit in February, and then he opened things up with Lowry and Zach, but you're going back to that and again in March, and that's not working. It's not going to work anymore, especially if you don't bring Robin Lopez back next year. And Carter's certainly not going to be able to play that same type of style next year if you bring Boylan back. He doesn't have the skill set Robin Lopez does to be able to just take over games underneath when you need some scoring. I think that's going to be a huge weakness next year. Like, just thinking ahead to game plans and situations, if Boylan's brought back next year, is like, this team is built to shoot threes, to run fast. And the way Jim Boylan has played this team almost the majority of the season has been going inside out. And who do you have on this team that's going to go inside out next year? Because you can't work it through Carter. He hasn't shown us anything yet that he's developed an inside or an offensive game at all. So I think I'm worried a little bit about that if Boylan's brought back.
Well, yeah, that's one of many things I'm worried about if Boylan is brought back.
Yeah, that's true. But just, you know, it does. It's a concern. Like, you think about it from that perspective, and I'll just tell you this, too. From March 1st to today, in 16 games, the Bulls are attempting the least amount of threes in the NBA at 23.8 three-point attempts per game, and they're shooting 33.9% too. So there's that. They're back to the least amount of threes per game in the NBA, which they had that rain in December of this year, and they had that rain in January of this year. So they hold that rain again in the month of March. So
not surprising.
I don't know how you win NBA games in the modern NBA when you don't shoot threes.
The answer is a quick one. You don't. You don't win in the NBA without shooting threes.
I mean, I thought we learned this pretty quickly when the Bulls went on the West Coast trip in the middle of January, and we saw Denver, we saw the Lakers, we saw Golden State, and a handful of other teams who just came out and shot 35 to 45 to 50 threes against the Bulls. And while they probably only shot 35 to 40%, they still kicked the Bulls' ass because they were chugging up threes. And that's the way the Bulls got beat. You're getting doubled up in attempts. And even if you do get doubled up in attempts, all it takes is 2, 3, 4, 5 more attempts, and you quickly find yourself down 10, 15 points. The Bulls can't match that inside when you only got one guy that can really, truly dominate inside, and dominates being pretty generous there with Robin Lopez, especially. I mean, his 2 months have been dominant, but other than that, a lot of question marks, though.
Yeah, like how many games do we have left? 4. That is the number that matters.
It's unfortunate that the Suns beat the Cavaliers last night, too. I was holding on to a little bit of hope.
Come on. Come on, Cavs. I'm so stupid, Cleveland.
Holding on a little bit of hope that Cleveland would pull off a win last night. They did not, to the Suns. So the Bulls hang on 2 games behind Cleveland with 4 games left?
The Cavs and the Bulls each have 4 games left, and I'm looking at the Cavs' remaining schedule now. for them to even just get two wins now, and if the Bulls lose out, which also might be tough considering the Bulls have another season finale game against the Sixers where they're probably going to sit everybody. And we're playing the eliminated Wizards tomorrow night. And again, against the Knicks. So that's it's not exactly like the Bulls are guaranteed to lose out. Meanwhile, the Cavs go at Sacramento, at Oakland, at Cleveland, and so home against the Spurs and then home against the Hornets. So none of those look like very winnable games. Kings maybe, Warriors maybe if the Warriors are resting, but the Warriors may not have the one seed locked up at that point yet. So,
well,
not looking good.
That's going to be tough. Let's switch gears for a second, though. We haven't talked hardly at all about going around the league and looking kind of around the league a little bit and how the playoffs are shaping up. So we wanted to do that really quickly. And Matt, while we look at these playoff teams and see what the matchups are going to look like, I want you to kind of keep in mind, too, maybe some guys that are going to be free agents this summer and maybe some players to watch and some players for Bulls fans, too, maybe who haven't been paying attention across the league. Some guys that maybe you'd be interested in this offseason or the Bulls might be interested in looking at this offseason that are going to be coming free agents. But I think the East still is, you know, that's still an interesting race with only four or five games left, depending on who you are as the team. We were just talking, there's four teams locked up with only a game and a half between them in that Eastern Conference for the last three spots. Like, that's pretty crazy coming down to the final stretch here. I mean, last year we had a play-in game, but to see this in the Eastern Conference, it's good, but it's also bad if you also look at their records. What do you think about, let's start at the bottom of the Eastern Conference and then work our way up. What do you think about those fringe 6, 7, and 8 teams between Orlando, the Heat, and the Pistons, and everybody else mixed in between?
Yeah, so I think at this point the Hornets are pretty much dead in the water. They're not mathematically eliminated yet, but they currently are 3 games behind Miami, which is the 8th seed right now. You know, obviously, the one bonus you would like, if you're talking about which teams in the East you want to see squeak into the playoffs with Charlotte, is Kemba, right? Like, playoff Kemba is a treat. And I, you know, not to get Bulls fans off on some crazy, you know, hope and a prayer, because guess what? Kemba, I've heard Bulls fans talk about him constantly. He ain't coming here. No way. He might finally be realizing that he's never going to win anything in Charlotte, which is probably true, and that maybe he should, you know, he should move on elsewhere, but it's not going to be here. But as just as far as entertaining NBA playoff value, I would love to be able to see Kemba in the playoffs. I would probably rather see Kemba in the playoffs than the Orlando Magic in the playoffs. Orlando's a half game back of Miami right now. At the same time, you know, like, Orlando's got some fun players. Like, Vucevic is a friggin' stud, and I'm still bitter. I would love, and this is just absolute bitter schadenfreude, I don't like you and I want you to be unhappy. I would love it if Dwayne Wade's Heat fell out of the playoffs in his retirement year. I would love it.
You're ridiculous. I kind of forgot about that Heat team, man. Like, they've gone on some weird runs. I don't know. I'm just not a... I could care less about the Dwayne Wade thing. I'm not really a big fan of that Heat team. And by the way, too, you know what makes me...
They're not a good team.
You know what makes me very angry about that Heat team, and I'm going to get a little bit upset about this, too, is literally about... I would say about a year ago, to around this time, maybe it was about, like, I don't know, back in that January, February time, Derrick Jones Jr., we talked about him. He was in the G League at that point. He had just been waived. The Heat decided to pick him up. We talked about him as this athletic, crazy, jump out of the gym type of dunker. And we're like, the Bulls should take a look at him, like a serious long look, and try and sign him and see what they can do for the rest of the season. They didn't do that, and now he's become a pretty damn good player for the Heat over the last year. So I remember specifically talking about him for a handful of weeks before he got signed with the Heat. That Nets team, though, is a lot of fun, man. I think I'm rooting for them to try to maybe take over that Pistons team with that sixth seed and see them matched up with the 76ers. Like, if there's any team out of that bottom four teams, the Pistons, Nets, Heat, and Magic, I think they're the one team that I could see upsetting one of the top three seeds.
And like, you know what
Nets
else?
Team is a lot of fun.
You know what else? I agree. I really enjoy watching that Nets team. I mean, D'Angelo Russell is just something special this season, and he's a lot of fun to watch. And he's got some nice teammates around him. But you know what else we get? If Brooklyn overtakes Detroit for the sixth seed, not only do we get 3-6 matchup of Sixers Nets, we get 2-7 Raptors Pistons. Dwayne Casey against the team that fired him with his new team. You get the Twin Towers of Drummond and Blake Griffin versus the new look Raptors led by Kawhi and Dwayne Casey against his former team. How much fun is that?
That's true. I totally forgot about Dwayne Casey. You know, the Pistons are kind of like in no man's land. Like, as good as their season has been, especially of late, like with Blake Griffin and the crazy season he's had. And he's going to be on an all-NBA team when the season wraps up. He's been that damn good.
Oh, absolutely.
They're still struggling to get fans to go into that arena and people to pay attention to that Pistons team. But they've played really good. And we just saw them not even a month ago with the Bulls, and they absolutely destroyed the Bulls. So I think that could be a pretty fun matchup. The other one I'm looking at, too, is the 5-4 matchup, the Pacers and the Celtics. It's too bad Victor Oladipo is going to be out.
Yeah, man. And that one's pretty much locked. Like, they have the exact same record, so it's only a matter of which team is the home team. But 4-5 is definitely going to be Celtics Pacers.
You think it's a done deal that Kyrie leaves from Boston, no matter what they do in the playoffs this year?
I think so. I think he's not happy there. I don't think anybody else is happy with him there. I mean, he's an incredible talent. He just seems to have this weird way about him that he just is, like, he doesn't get along well with people. And, you know, we saw the video of him and Kevin Durant talking in the tunnel at All-Star Weekend, and it very much looked like Kyrie was talking about the Knicks having two max spots open and that they should go play together at the Garden and, you know, bring the Knicks back to relevance. And we'll see if Kevin Durant has any interest in doing that. I do think that Durant is looking to leave Golden State, because I think he knows that right now his legacy is not that impressive, having to leave his team and go to a super team to win a couple of titles, and that he's getting sick of people not talking about him as one of the greatest ever. And he knows that he has to go and win somewhere that's not the Warriors in order for his legacy to be better than what it is. So I think he does want to leave, but I don't know if he wants to play with Kyrie, because, you know, Kyrie's a head case. That, you know, all that being said, yes, I think Kyrie is not back in Boston next season.
Just thinking in terms for the Bulls and their future, you know, the less stars that continue to come to the East, the better, right? Like,
yeah,
we're talking about all these teams with the most amount of money this offseason. We're talking about the Knicks. We're talking about, like, Atlanta, which is a team that hasn't been talked about all that much, but they have one of the top teams with the most amount of money to spend this summer, too. And the way that they have been playing, I get it. They're still in rebuild mode. But Trae Young winning all these games, how good that their young players have come along. I wouldn't be surprised if a second-tier star says, you know what, they're on a faster pace than I thought that they were. And hell, man, if by some miracle they ended up winning the lottery this year, too, you might see a shift from one of these stars. I don't know who it would be, but maybe somebody says, you know what, maybe Atlanta's not a bad idea after all. They got some young pieces down there. Maybe I should try that out.
Well, yeah, I mean, do they have a young, enticing core that they're building there with with Collins and Trae Young, but as far as attractive cities, attractive markets, like, you know, Atlanta, no, is not as big as L.A. or New York or maybe even Chicago, but it is still a fairly big market sports town. Atlanta is a also very, you know, a very fun city. They have amazing food. They have amazing like music and entertainment culture. People shoot movies and TV shows down there. There's tons of various music artists. Like, Atlanta is a hoppin' city, and it's a warm weather climate city. So as far as other elements of what free agents look for, not only do they seem to have an interesting young group of talent, but NBA players definitely always at least look at Atlanta because NBA players really like Atlanta.
I agree with that. Like, I think that they can be a dark horse. And maybe, I mean, you know, they were talking about surprise teams. Zach Lowe and Ryan Russillo were talking about surprise teams. I mean, Atlanta might be a surprise team, man. For AD, like, they might be a team that might be willing to gamble if they didn't have to give up Trae Young. I mean, maybe John Collins, if they're willing to do that and feel like they can keep Anthony Davis and convince him, they might be a team willing to roll the dice. I don't know if they would, but they've got certainly enough pieces and enough picks to do that, especially if they get two picks in the top 10 this year. Like, that might be enticing enough for the Pelicans to say, you know what, we're good on the Lakers offer. AD doesn't really want to go to Boston, and they're not going to give us what we want, so maybe we start looking on the outside and see what other teams want to gamble on this. So Atlanta, I don't think people should count them out this summer. Real quick, though, before we go to the Western Conference real fast, Kemba and the Hornets, I want to circle back to them. What's he doing this summer? You know, we talked at the trade deadline, thought he was going to stay. They tried to make a push for Marcus Gasol. That trade fell through, which was really weird, really odd. Seemed like it pissed off a lot of Hornets fans. He ended up going to Toronto instead. And then that fell apart. Their team fell apart. And now they're going to be on the brink of missing the playoffs, which I think ultimately really kills their opportunity to keep Kemba around.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about some of Kemba's comments from earlier this season about how, you know, he wants to be a Hornet for life, and you know, he's very, I think it does mean a lot to him that he has become the franchise's leading scorer and all these things. Like, there is nobody more Hornets, there's nobody more who they are to their team outside of maybe Russell Westbrook with the Thunder right now than what Kemba Walker means in Charlotte. And I just think that we've started to hear that he's finally coming around to the idea and to the sad reality that they're just not good enough at building around him. Our guy, MJ, try as he might, has not really been able to build a contender at any point in Charlotte. And if Kemba doesn't want to waste away the remaining prime years of his career, he has to know that he's got to go somewhere else. And where that is, I don't know. And it's kind of like the whole domino theory when we get closer to talking about NBA free agency and the first domino falls and then everybody else kind of figures things out after that. Well, LeBron's not the first domino this year. LeBron's in L.A., and he's under, you know, contract for three more years, and he's, you know, there's a no-trade clause. So the big dominoes are KD, Kyrie, and then I think, like, after those two, and maybe right with those two, Kemba's the other big domino. But I don't, like, we people don't talk as much about Kemba and where he might want to play as people do with Kyrie and Durant.
Right.
And I don't know why that is, but for whatever reason, it's like Kemba's still a giant mystery as far as where he might go this summer. But I do think we might finally reach that point where Kemba says, you know what? I got a great offer from somewhere else. I'm ready to move on. Because he could, the Hornets could just sign him to another mega deal and he could stay there and fight for an 8 seed for another 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah.
But does he really want to do that?
I think it's going to be weighing his options. You know, it's, what does he want to do? Does he want to, like, if he re-signs with the Hornets, he's a Hornet for life. He's going to be a legend there. He's going to be a legend in Charlotte. He'll be a Hall of Famer with the Hornets. He'll be beloved for life. That's set in stone, done. That certainly means a lot to a lot of guys. But if he wants to win a championship and further his NBA legacy overall and his standing around the league, then maybe he does look for other opportunities around the league. I don't know how that would sour as far as what Hornets fans would feel of him. I don't think that they could really blame him, though. Like, the Hornets haven't done much to help him and surround him with players that can help him win championships. And they didn't do that in the draft either. Look at the guys that they've drafted since they picked Kemba Walker. I mean, their draft picks have been god-awful. Noah Vonleh, Frank Kaminsky. I mean, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist.
Yeah. And people were talking about them offering up several first-round picks to get Frank Kaminsky. Like, what? What? Look, as much as Bulls fans adore Michael Jordan and what he means not just to this organization but to the NBA, the dude is proving one season at a time that he is not a very good evaluator of talent when it comes to building his team and drafting the right guys.
You had mentioned it, though. Kemba Walker is going to be an interesting one of those interesting tier two stars after KD goes off, after Kyrie, after Jimmy, after Clay, after Kawhi. All of these guys sign. I think we're going to start looking at the second tier of Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler, Kemba Walker, and all of these guys saying, kind of, where are you guys going? How are you guys fitting in? And what are the big teams that's spending money that need a point guard? New York, Brooklyn, the Clippers, Dallas, Atlanta, Indiana, the Lakers, Philadelphia, Sacramento, Utah. Those are the top 10 teams with the most salary cap space this summer to spend. Think about those teams for a second. Who's signing a big-time point guard? Maybe the Lakers if they move Lonzo? But how much better are you getting then if you don't land somebody like AD?
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, that's one situation where I might be interested, talking about teams with the most money and teams that need a point guard. What if instead of Kyrie going to the Knicks, Kemba goes to the Knicks? Honestly, I would like that more, I think, because as much as the Bulls-Knicks rivalry from the heyday of the 90s and even the late 80s was a great piece of the Bulls team's history, that rivalry kind of just isn't anything right now. Bulls-Knicks is nothing. So I wouldn't feel as awkward about wanting to see the Knicks turn it around. And let's be real, if the Knicks are relevant finally for the first time in forever, it's going to make the league more interesting. And I may be regretting those words as soon as the Knicks become the story that everybody can't stop talking about if they land a big name star. But right now, if you're going to tell me the Knicks are either going to get Kyrie or the Knicks are going to get Kemba, I'd want to see the Knicks get Kemba, because I like Kemba Walker. The dude's an amazing player who seemingly is also a pretty good guy on and off the floor, and Kyrie Irving drives me fucking crazy. And I would have a hard time rooting for the Knicks if it was Kyrie Irving trying to lead them back to relevance. I would not have as hard of a time rooting for them if Kemba came to the Garden and was like, New York is my city now. I would actually like that a lot.
And man, the biggest carrot of it all is Kemba grew up in the Bronx. I mean, and exactly. Also too, his tournament run with UConn was legitimately at Madison Square Garden, where he hit all those clutch shots. And, you know, you get goosebumps if you can remember back to that tournament where he had that amazing run. You think about him kind of returning back to that stage, and Knicks fans probably were just sitting there screaming, like, absolutely not. If we get Kemba Walker, it's a failed offseason. We're supposed to get KD, and we're supposed to get Kyrie and all these top other guys, and that's how we're supposed to win a championship. But, man, like, you're the Knicks. Like, beggars can't be choosers at this point. So I think Kemba Walker would be fantastic, but it's going to be weird if the Knicks don't end up at number one and they don't get Zion. What if they end up at two and or three? And that's going to be a weird situation too with their draft picks. But let's take a quick look at the Western Conference before we get out of here. Obviously, all eight teams are set in stone, but the Spurs and the Thunder and the Jazz and the Clippers can still flip-flop in positioning. I mean, the Spurs and the Thunder can flip, theoretically, with the Clippers and the Jazz if either of those teams lose out, but I don't know if I see that happening. So more likely than not, the 5 and the 6 are up to flip at 47 wins apiece, the Jazz and the Clippers. The Rockets
and so are the 3 and the 4 right now, Blazers and Rockets.
Yeah, so this the race is pretty tight. I mean, even the one and the two, the Warriors and the Nuggets are only separated by a game for the one and the two seed. So as you look at this Western Conference, Matt, look at it up and down, looks pretty different from last year. What teams do you like? And are you worried about the Warriors at all with their kind of skid over the last 6 weeks and some of the dysfunction that they've had?
I think the Warriors are just a team desperate to get to the playoffs when games matter. I mean, you've heard Steve Kerr talk about it. You've heard some of the players talk about it as far as how challenging it is to, you know, play these huge 82-game regular seasons knowing that your team's primary goal starts in middle of April. So you need to try and find ways to set other mini goals for yourself to keep yourselves focused. And, you know, Kerr talks about doing that with the second Bulls three-peat team in the late 90s and the ways that they tried to overcome that challenge and trying to do the same things with his Warriors team that, let's be real, definitely look like they have been out of focus and dragging through large parts of this season. Things like getting blown out at home to subpar teams and all that kind of stuff. So all that said, I'm not that worried. I still think that the Warriors by far are the best team on paper, not just in the conference, but in the league. They have several future Hall of Famers in their prime. It's theirs to lose. That said, you know, I think it would be pretty exciting to see a Warriors-Thunder first round matchup. I think the Warriors would win it, but we might get some exciting moments out of it and maybe more than just four or five games. The interesting one that I think, if you're talking about a big upset in the first round, is if the Thunder end up as the 7 seed and play Denver in round one. I think the Thunder could upset Denver just because that Denver team, pretty new to this whole, you know, in a position of power, home court advantage in the playoffs. Like, Jokic has been amazing this season. They have a lot of, you know, commenting a lot of complimentary pieces around him. Jamal Murray is having a great year. I think that the Thunder could upset them.
You look at the San Antonio Spurs, too. I mean, 44-33, you look at that record and say, okay, the San Antonio Spurs, if you haven't been paying attention most of the season, they're like, they're not that bad. Matt, we saw them back in December, and we were like, the Bulls pull off a win, and I had mentioned to you that the Spurs had only one loss after leading after three quarters, and the Bulls were the one team to pull off that win against them, which is still blows my mind. The one thing that jumps out to me, though, is the 30-9 record at home. The Spurs are 30-9 at home.
Yeah.
And 14-24 on the road. So they're dominating at home, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. So I'm not saying that they can win a first-round playoff matchup, but if you're telling me that they can push one of these series to maybe 7 games, I'm saying I think that's entirely possible, especially if they go up against maybe the Nuggets in the first round if they sit at 7 still. That's entirely possible, and that's not a good sign for the Nuggets or the Warriors if you're looking for an easy first-round matchup. And I don't think either of these teams are easy first-round matchups, like you were talking about with the Thunder. And even with this Spurs team, like I said, 30-9 at home is insane. And even just in their last month, they've picked up wins against some of the best teams in the entire league. They beat the Warriors. They beat the Nuggets. They had beaten a handful of other really good teams, too, just in the last month. So I would watch out for the Spurs. The Clippers have been playing decent basketball, too. The Rockets are going to be...
Dude, the Clippers traded Tobias Harris and
got better. I don't
know
how
better.
You do that.
It's insane. I mean, honest credit to Doc Rivers, man. Everybody thought that move signaled that the Clippers were just kind of going to bow out and maybe just fall out of the Western Conference playoffs and try and protect their pick from that trade. Couldn't be further from the case. They're like, nah, we're still going to make the playoffs.
Danilo Gallinari, who has been having an unbelievable season. Matt, we talked about him at the trade deadline as saying, like, if the Clippers are trying to unload all that money, like, maybe he's a guy that the Bulls look at instead of Otto Porter Jr., who we didn't even know was on the radar, but saying, like, trying to find a way to teams to unload salary. Maybe you take him on and you have to deal a piece or two. Man, people are talking about him as maybe having some mentions for all NBA. He's having that good of a season. You don't, you look at his box score, you look at his stats across per games. It's not jump off the screen to you, but let me just read some of these to you. 19.8 points per game, fine, not that great. 6.2 rebounds, 2.5 assists, okay. But he's shooting 46.3% from the field. He's shooting 43.4% from three on 5.6 attempts per game. That's ridiculous. Wow.
That's crazy.
That is ridiculous. And then you jump down to his offense and defensive rating. This season in 65 games. Mind you, he only played 21 last year, dealing with a bunch of injuries. He has 125 offensive rating and an 111 defensive rating. So his net rating is a plus 14. Plus 14 this year. So he's having an incredible year. So he's been part of the reason why that Clippers team has been so good. And maybe in part, too, trading Tobias Harris has kind of opened things up for Gallinari, too. So I'm surprised he's doing this at 30 years old. And I think a lot of people kind of forgot that he's still there and he signed that contract and he's kind of got flown under the radar, but he's having a really decent season for that Clippers team.
Yeah, I mean, truly impressive. And speaking of those Clippers, I'm going to throw out a couple more hypotheticals to you that I would like to see in the Western Conference. I mean, I think we're going to get entertaining first-round matchups in the West regardless, but there are a couple of really, like, sweet would-bes. And one of them to me is if the Clippers manage to leapfrog Utah, who the Jazz have won five straight. They're 9 out of their last 10. They look like one of the hottest teams in the league right now. You know, they dispersed us fairly easily not that long ago. But if the Clippers leap Utah for the fifth seed and we get Clippers Rockets in round one, then you get all of that Clippers Rockets beef that exists in a first round 4-5 matchup, which would be so much fun. And then you also get Utah sliding down to 6 for potentially a Blazers-Jazz first-round series that is highlighted by what? Damian Lillard versus Donovan Mitchell. How fun would that be?
I'll take it. I mean, I'll take it just for the Clippers and Rockets beef. Like, give me that. I want the Clippers and Rockets beef. That was...
wait, come on, man.
Numerous social media reports that LAPD was called.
LAPD was called. See, these two, man.
Come on, man.
You know why they're laughing at
them. Come on, man.
Because they would... They would relish.
Come on.
For a guy to come in the locker room after them.
Hey, Chuck. So, Chuck.
I don't know what this is. I don't know why.
Hello, police. Chris Paul trying to beat me up.
That series would be a ton of fun. Regardless, I think this Western Conference playoffs is going to be good. All these series and all these teams, 1 through 8, I think are good. None of the other teams snuck in that I was like, you know, there's one series out of this either side. And even on the Western Conference, there's usually one series that you're like, that's going to be a 4-game blowout. The games aren't going to be really that competitive. I don't see it in the Western Conference this year. I think 1 through 8, all these teams are pretty solid and these matchups are going to be pretty good. Maybe that Nuggets and Spurs series might be a case of every team that's at home is going to pound them. And it's just going to be a matter of who's the home team, which would be the Nuggets in this case. But that Nuggets team is damn good too. But yeah, it's too bad. As good as the Kings played this year, they just kind of fell off a cliff at the end and couldn't keep up. They ended up falling 5 games back and not making a playoff appearance.
I mean, they kind of hit a wall at the end. But 38-39, that right now is the record of Miami Heat, who are the 8th seed in the East. So. And even still, it's a huge jump for the Kings, and they showed a lot of promise this year with all of that young talent they have. You know, De'Aaron Fox having a huge breakout year, Buddy Hield doing some really nice things. They've got an exciting young team, and I know it's really hard for teams to make that jump into playoff contention in the West more so than the East, but even still. If you told me that the Kings were going to finish with a better record than the Lakers, LeBron's Lakers, I wasn't convinced that the Lakers were going to be like a top 4 seed in a very tough West. But I did think they would sneak into the playoffs somewhere in the bottom half. But for the Kings to say, "Nah, we're not. You're not the next team in the West. We're the next team in the West that's going to be up and coming." You got to give Sacramento a lot of credit because they're usually the laughing stock of the league, but they did some nice things this year.
That's true. And just real quick on the Sacramento Kings, Marvin Bagley, too, I think has had quietly a really nice rookie year, especially for all the criticism that the Kings got for taking him at number two. And rightfully so. I mean, you passed up on Trae Young. You passed up on Luka Doncic. You passed up on Jaren Jackson Jr.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it was the wrong idea. Like, they picked the guy that they wanted at two, but, and you had a bunch of big men already, like Harry Giles and Willie Cauley-Stein and Scott Labissiere. Like, you already had a bunch of big men, and you took Marvin Bagley. But he's having a good season. 14.7 points, 7.4 rebounds, one assist, one block. He's shooting 51.7% from the field. Effective field goal percentage is 53.6% this year, so that's pretty good. I mean, I don't think people thought he was going to be this effective this early, and him and Harry Giles have played really well together in stretches off the bench. So I've been impressed with what I've seen from the 19-year-old rookie, and it's been better than I think a lot of people expected in year one.
Especially considering that for the entirety of the year, you know, I think save a few games here and there, he's been a bench player. He's been coming off the bench, and to average 14.7 and 7.4 with a PER, as you said, of 19.3 as a rookie in that role, like, it's pretty impressive. And so while maybe they did reach on him at the number two pick, and they, you know, they're regretting right now not having Trae Young or not having Luka or not having Jaren Jackson Jr., I think, you know, Bagley has shown plenty of promise himself. And there's a reason that, you know, we'll see when it's all said and done. Obviously, you know, the tie there is Bulls fans wondering if Wendell will ever, you know, go on to actually be a better NBA player than his teammate, his former teammate Marvin Bagley. I guess we'll find out. You know, Bagley only played 57 games this year. Wendell played fewer than that. So it was kind of tough to judge their rookie years, but you know, I think the Kings and the Bulls are happy with the guys they got from that Duke front court.
I think that's it's also a good thing to look at, too, for Bulls fans, too, this summer. Depending on who the Bulls take, say they do take a wing, too. Like, let's just say, for instance, that the Bulls take a wing at four or three, like an R.J. Barrett or a Jarrett Culver or somebody like that. I think taking a look at what Marvin Bagley has done this year and seeing the position breakdown of the Kings and seeing the clog that they had in their front court, don't be over dramatic if you see the Bulls not starting that guy right away next year either. Like, guys can develop coming off the bench, especially if they're young. So, you know, when we were talking about that too, even like, what do you do now that you have Porter? And if you do decide to draft a wing, like, what happens with that? Like, you just took a guy in the top five. How are you not playing him right away when you're still rebuilding? Like, all those weird things. Guys still can develop coming off the bench, and they can still get their minutes. Like, Marvin Bagley was still averaging 25, 26 minutes a night. So you're still getting starter minutes, even if you do come off the bench, and you can still develop pretty nicely. And this is actually, I think, played into Marvin Bagley's favor. Maybe he would have been overmatched had he started against a lot of these Western Conference teams. And I think maybe he would have struggled a little bit more. So maybe this is to his benefit.
Well, and we certainly saw Wendell fight through some of that stuff as a starter this year, being asked to guard some of the best bigs in the league and getting into early foul trouble and stuff like that. It's very good observation by you, Jordan, that a lot of Bulls fans, for that reason, I've heard people talking about, you know, maybe we should bring Wendell off the bench next year as opposed to throwing him in the starting lineup. Now, I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm saying the point of Bagley having better opportunities to develop playing against reserve units as opposed to being thrown against the starting bigs across the league is a good thing for Bagley. And maybe Wendell got dealt a tough hand this season. But when you look at what the Bulls have specifically, and for the love of God, can we finally get some Markin and Wendell action going? That's what needs to happen. Because you're talking about that being your front court of the future. And between Markkanen's late start and Wendell's early exit, we barely got any crossover there at all. So that is, to me, as big of a thing on the to-do list as anything else next season for the Bulls is develop some chemistry between Lowry and Wendell. And that, of course, requires Wendell to start alongside Lowry Markkanen.
Yeah, I think just as important, too, is some chemistry between Wendell and Zach LaVine, too. I want to see those guys play in a two-man game. Like, as much as we want to see Zach and Lowry playing two-man game, I want to see Wendell and Zach playing a two-man game, too. The more options you have on that floor, the better. And I don't remember who I was telling this to, but I think Wendell is going to be a wild card next year. You know, I think he needs to take a big step offensively next year just because he lost out on what we saw this season as far as second half development, seeing kind of the strides he could take on that side. We saw him struggle with the fouls, and that was in part because of the guys that were playing around him too. He's getting in early foul trouble because he was making up for mistakes for his teammates. And, you know, I felt like, and I had film on it too, where he was getting called for fouls that he wasn't even getting hacked, but that's neither here nor there. The defense is good. Now I need to see the offense. Where is that going to come? And maybe this is a good thing too. Otto, Zach, and Lowry, three guys that can shoot and score, I think is only going to open things up for Wendell Carter Jr. next year. And I think it's going to be a lot easier for him to find easy buckets next year. So don't be surprised if, even if his skills aren't super refined next year on the offensive side, I think you're going to see a boost in his offensive numbers, and maybe not shots per game, but just more efficient score than we did see him this year. Because outside of Zach, when he was on the floor, who else? And when Wendell was trying to make things happen, he had two guys swarming him, and then he was kicking out to Jabari, who was standing in the corner, or Cameron Payne, who would just turn the ball over. So I think having Otto, Zach, and Lowry now fully healthy on the floor, and then whoever else they add in free agency and the draft, I think he's only really going to help Wendell's offensive game. So we'll see. But he's going to be a wild card, and he needs to make those improvements. And I think we need to see something from him next year on the offensive side.
Right. And, you know, as we said when we were talking about, you know, Wendell and Bagley just a second ago, much like we saw Wendell showcase a greater level of skill and preparedness to be that guy in some of the games that Marvin Bagley missed for Duke down the stretch when he was recuperating, I'm hoping, well, you know, all the stuff you're talking about having a healthy roster around him finally and having more space to operate, that we can see something similar, because we did get a few of those games this season. I know it feels like a lifetime ago, but remember, we did get like some games from Wendell where he was flirting with like 30-point double-doubles because they decided to make him a focal point of the offense. And we know that he has that potential. Certainly, he showed the ability to be that kind of player at the collegiate level when Bagley was out and they needed Wendell to step up. Next season, it may add a huge helping hand to what this Bulls team can do and how they do it as far as operationally on the offensive end. Wendell just needs a little bit more experience and complementary pieces, and he can be a higher ceiling offensive player in the league.
I agree with that. Like I said, I think it's just going to come back to having other guys around him, like you were saying, too.
Absolutely.
You know, defense swarming him. And like you said, 25 points against Denver back in October. He had 28 against Detroit at the end of November. And then he had 22 against Portland at the start of the new year, a couple games before he got hurt. So that was three good teams. Those are three playoff teams he ended up scoring his three highest points of the season against. So that's good to see, too. We just need to see that more consistently, and I'm very curious to see how they're going to do that next year. But, yeah, just talking about Marvin Bagley in general, depending on who they draft this year, don't freak out if the Bulls end up deciding to start putting them on the bench and rolling them with the second unit to start the season. You know, if the Bulls want to be competitive next year, that's kind of the route that the Kings went this year. So maybe you see the Bulls do something similar if they just stand pat and take their pick wherever they're at, 3, 5, 4, 6, 7, wherever it ends up, 1. wherever it ends up. I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, though, 331-979-1369. You want to jump into this conversation, anything we talked about on today or yesterday's episode, we'd love to hear from you. We're doing mailbag tomorrow, so get your voicemails in, 331-979-1369. Don't be shy. Drop us a phone call. We want to hear from you. Get your questions in. You can drop us text, too. You can tweet at us, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. We'll get to all of your questions and all of your voicemails on tomorrow's episode. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peckham, Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Hey, Chuck. No. Hey, Chuck.
I don't know. Hello, police. I don't know why.
Hello, police. Chris Paul trying to beat me up. Gerald Green.
Is this a prank call?
Hey, James.
Is he prank calling us?
6'10", 225, one of the most powerful players in the NBA. But Chris Paul trying to get in here, kick my ass. Get down here quick.
As we head to break, Jeremy, let's take a look at the shoes. The 3-month collection celebrating black heritage around the world by fueling community action.
Did you see them realize what they used to play with the Rockets with the guard now with the Clippers?
Patrick Beverly?
Nobody was trying to get Patrick
Nobody
Beverly.
Nobody was trying to get Patrick Beverly. You know, Chris Paul wasn't trying to get Patrick.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com